This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
By the way, on the show.
Well, in most instances, I would say that the go-ahead RBI would be the lead highlight for a player, especially an overlooked, underrated afterthought of a player. But in this case, Jake Fraley's RBI single in the 11th, which gave the Mariners the lead that they never lost, was only the second most impressive thing he did, because we had a night of unlikely heroes, Paul. The Mariners escape timeout. You can talk about them, correct?
They are out of timeout. Congratulations. You beat the Detroit Tigers. Almost made it. Not a victory. Almost put yourselves back in timeout, whatever.
It wasn't that close. There's just a glimmer of doubt there in the 11th. The Mariners remain perfect in extra innings games. Don't complain about the put the runner on second rule. It seems to work out just fine for them. They scored one in the 10th after giving up the equalizer on a wild pitch. They came back and scored a boatload in the 11th and ended up winning by 3 runs.
Yes, they did. And look, when you see Jake Fraley doing what he's doing, I don't know if this is sustainable. I am getting 2020 Dylan Moore vibes in that I'm just impressed by all the things he is doing, not just by the walks he is drawing.
Massive amounts of walks.
By the way, 0 walks last night. Instead, it's what he's doing with not just his bat, but with his glove.
Well, he stole a home run. He stole a home run that would have ended the game in the bottom of the 9th inning, and one that is Aaron Goldsmith does not often have his voice crack. I saw he made this remark on Twitter, but when he does, it's spectacular. It certainly was last night.
Paredes clubs this to left field. Fraley leaps in. Fraley made the catch. Are you serious? Shed gets 2. Wow. Unreal.
That's a fantastic call, Aaron. Fantastic.
Tell you what, it might have been the second most impressive catch by an outfielder in the game. It's the most important. Dylan Thomas, who was playing in his first major league game.
Dylan!
The catch he made earlier in the game, not as important, and it wouldn't have been a home run, probably higher degree of difficulty. The one that he made. You had 2 guys, and then Dylan Thomas, by the way, gets his first major league hit, and he drives in 2 in that 11th inning. It was a day of unlikely heroes.
Yes, it was. Whenever I see the name Dylan, whether it's Dylan Moore or Dylan Thomas, I just think of that scene at the beginning of Predator where Arnold goes up to Dylan. Dylan, you son of a biscuit. Very good job by Dylan Thomas in that spot. And yeah, too, with Jake Fraley, I can't get over, Danny, what we're seeing out of Jake Fraley. He's hitting .257. That's the second best mark on the team. He has vaulted to 5th in the batting order. Maybe this isn't sustainable, but, man, he is stepping up at a big time for this team that has sorely lacking for pop.
These are the sort of stories that make a baseball season fun. They're the reason why 162 games that you kind of, when they talk about it being a marathon and you go along for the ride, these are the kind of moments that are fun. It's a moment, I'm not sure how long it'll last for Jake Fraley. He was awful in spring training. He had about as tough a spring training as you could possibly have. He was someone that they had some high expectations for. Then he gets hurt. He comes back and he's chipping in. And then Dylan Thomas, who's been in the minors for 10 years.
That's nuts.
He's been in there for 10 years. He's played some in independent leagues, which in organized baseball is about as last gasp as it gets. It means no team's paying you. No organization, no major league team. You're going at it on your own with an independent, unaffiliated team. And he gets to the big leagues yesterday. And, well, before we get to his hit, here was the catch he made. And this was earlier in the game at the end of the 2nd inning.
The pitch swung on and a fly ball into right field. Thomas back deep into right center field. At the wall, leaps up, and he makes the catch. Holy smokes, Dylan Thomas, his major league debut, timing that leap up against the wall in right center out by the scoreboard. Look at the reaction by Thomas, bobbing his head, running in. He makes an outstanding catch to save a run. Here in the bottom of the 2nd, Dylan Thomas, welcome to the big leagues. An outstanding play to retire the side.
Feel yourself.
Get that ish out of here.
It's impressive.
Get it out of here, I believe, was a loose translation of what he said after making the grab.
This team is really good in the field. And even with the injuries, they're still really good in the field. I don't know how they keep it up, but, I mean, last night, just on full display. And, of course, I mean, we're forgetting about the guy who has been unbelievable over the past month. The guy at the top of the order who deserves to be at the top of the order. That's J.P. Crawford, who has another 2-for-4 night.
Yeah, no, 3-run homer by Kyle Seager. Afterwards, here's Dylan Thomas talking about the emotions he felt in playing a game after a decade of working up the different rungs, working up the different rungs of pro baseball to reach this point.
Once again, it was just, you know, surreal. You think about, you try and put yourself in that moment and, you know, think about it so that when it actually does happen, it doesn't, you know, speed up on you or catch you off guard. But you know, once I saw them after the game, I couldn't help but break down and get emotional. You know, it was a family effort to get here. You know, I couldn't be sitting where I am right now without, you know, both my mom, my dad, my sister, you know, just everybody in my family. They've been the ones that, you know, keep me going all these years. And I'm so grateful, you know, to have had that support system.
That's got me a little bit emotional. I mean, imagine the perseverance that it must take to stick with minor league baseball, which is not a fun experience day to day as far as the non-baseball playing. Yeah, man. I mean,
it's not glamorous.
No.
It's not, you're not getting training spreads. You're not getting first class flights. You're not getting flights. You're riding buses. You're living in small towns. You're living with families.
And he was able to stick it out. This is also one of the cool things that you see in sports, but maybe we don't talk up enough. When somebody sticks with something, despite being told, no, 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 this probably isn't the best idea. Maybe it's time to go do something else. And they finally get their chance. And not only when they get their chance, they just play, they deliver.
Think about what your dream is. And think about maybe what the dream was you had when you were 12, 13, or 14 years old. And most of us, I'll raise my hand and include this, your reality intrudes. Reality intrudes or things change, or you face the fact in your mid-20s that it's probably not going to work out the way you imagined, and if it does, it's going to be a lot harder than you thought. Sports can be a fantasy land. It can also be a place where dreams break, but then there are times you get to see that dream kind of come through for a moment. And for Dylan Thomas, that's the culmination of years of work. I can't imagine how many times he came close. He's got a family that he has to take care of. How many times he came close and thought, am I holding on to this too long? Should I be doing something else? Should I be more realistic? Because there's definitely no guarantee he was going to get to this point. And we'll see where his career goes from here. But like for that moment, like you got to see a dream come true. Like you really got to see, and you got to see him make as unbelievable a catch as you'll see in baseball in the second inning. And then in the bottom of the 11th, when he singles in his first big league hit, he drives in 2 runs as the Mariners latch 5. And by the way, did you see him score from first?
Yeah.
Did you see him motoring around? Like, he was moving. It's a really fun moment in a season. I don't know how much it'll have to do with the standings at the end of the year, but I know for last night, watching it was really, really cool.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And look, it's not just having that perseverance. He said it there. You have to have some really supportive people around you that are going to allow you to pursue something like that. Because how many would be patient sitting there and waiting and thinking that this is something that's never going to amount to anything more than just minor leagues forever and ever? Props to his family for sticking by him all this time. They've got to feel just as much a part of what he did last night as he did.
You people out there are terrible. From the 360, the Mac and Jack's text line, so now the Mariners have 5 outfielders that are better than Kelnick. Wah! What? We have all this touching, stirring, heart-rending, emotional stuff. Man, somebody's hating on Goldsmith's call, saying he sounded like a... Come on. Sounded like a kid. But it's time, Danny, to assess the Mariners. Is this really an improvement from prior years at just under 500? That comes from the 206. Ah, forget you all.
Enjoy the one night. They're out of timeout. There was much rejoicing.
They beat the Tigers, and here you are like, well, actually, this wasn't sustained. It was an awesome moment. Let us have it. It's time to get to front page news.
This is the Front Page. Today's top two stories and why they matter. Every morning at 7:10. Get what you need to know to start your day right now.
Danny, do you want to make everybody mad?
Yeah, let's do it.
They're already mad.
You can't get tear. You don't tear up at Dylan Thomas's discussion of how hard it was to get to the big leagues. You deserve to be riled.
So let's just talk about the answers given by players when they are asked whether or not they've been given the vaccine.
Oh, that's not controversial at all.
No.
I'm sure everybody will be very understanding of the nuances of the subject.
I think it'll bring us all back together with all these hostile people that don't want to hear all these unbelievable, warm, feel-good stories. Montez Sweat, when asked about the vaccine, until I get more facts, I'm not a fan of it. By the way, the Washington football team did bring in somebody so that they could ask questions.
Stop editorializing.
I haven't caught COVID yet, so I don't see me treating COVID until I actually get COVID. Everyone is entitled to their own decision. Bobby Wagner had some interesting things to say about it, Danny.
He did. He responded and said, because Montez Sweat has gotten mocked pretty relentlessly over the answer. And Bobby Wagner said, why not just focus on answering his questions instead of focusing on how he expressed himself? Which is probably a more pragmatic approach to it, of like, if you express some uncertainty, address those instead of just saying, can you believe that this guy said this? That's probably the more compassionate or thoughtful answer to getting around it. But no, that's not how we do it. We just yell at people now, right?
Rabble, exactly.
Yeah, Sam Darnold also said he's evaluating the situation, that he has not gotten the vaccine yet, and it expressed some uncertainty about Will and said he needs to learn more. And that, so we're going to spend the next several months getting enraged on both sides at how players talk about the vaccine if they have not received it.
In defense of the players somewhat, I don't think this is necessarily just about the vaccine. I think it also might have something to do with distrust of team doctors. Because I think that often team doctors are going to tell a player what the team expects and wants out of a player who's injured. So maybe they're a little paranoid on that front.
Sam Darnold's quote, there's a ton of different things that go into it. I'm going to evaluate that on my own and make the best decision that I feel is the best for myself. Go ahead, send in your angry text. We know you're mad.
The Front Page.
Let's go to something we can all laugh at, right?
We've gotten the anger out. Yeah.
I think we should be all able to laugh at Pete Alonso. Let's see. Pete Alonso is a Mets infielder. Very, very good. Very good first baseman. Can clobber the ball. But he's got some interesting ideas about the manipulation of baseballs.
Oh, no. That's a fact. Yes, guys have talked about it. But, I mean, in 2019, there's a huge class of free agent pitchers. And that's, quote, unquote, the juice balls. And then 2020 was a strange year with the COVID season. But now that we're back to playing a regular season with a ton of shortstops or position players that are going to be paid a lot of money, like high caliber players. I mean, yeah, I mean, it's not a coincidence. And I think that it definitely is something that they do.
Solid conspiracy theory here. His belief is that Major League Baseball changes the ball based on who's going to be free agents. And they do it to either to lower the market value. If it's going to be a really good group of pitchers, make that ball easier to hit out of the park. So over the course of that year, the pitchers will look worse. If it's going to be a really good crop of hitters like this year, well, let's make that sucker easier to throw. And we got something for you all because the pitchers are going to dominate this year.
Is this a case of Manfred derangement syndrome where they just assume the worst because Rob Manfred's in charge of baseball? And is there any small sliver of truth, Danny, to this theory that Pete Alonso's throwing out there? Because I think he sounds pretty crazy.
I think he sounds nuts.
But
I kind of blame baseball because they've had so many things happen that I'm like, is that more nuts than stuff we've actually seen occur? Is that beyond the pale of, hey, everybody knew that they were using sticky stuff, pitchers were, so it gets to the point where there's, everybody knew there was sign stealing going on, and then all of a sudden that becomes a big deal. Like, baseball's kind of mismanaged itself into being untrustworthy.
Everyone knows that there was some collusion going on in free agency over the last couple of years, just given how slow those markets have been. So,
And by the last couple, you mean by like the last 30, because collusion happened in the 80s, too.
Oh. Let's get to the professor.
Let's get to the professor. It's time for our morning drive with John Clayton.
John Clayton's morning drive with Danny and Gallant.
It's a four-way battle, and there's only going to be three spots. Somebody has to go.
The first and final word on everything NFL from the professor, John Clayton.
They scored 30 points a game. They're the best running team in football.
It's John Clayton's morning drive with Danny and Gallant.
Professor, per his ex-teammate, Kareem Jackson, Deshaun Watson wants to play for the Broncos. I guess who's more likely to play for the Broncos this coming season? Is it Watson or is it Aaron Rodgers?
I'd say Aaron Rodgers because, I think ownership, particularly the way the ownership is in Denver, will have some questions about Deshaun Watson because they're not going to be able to resolve unless he settles 22 lawsuits, anything with that case for the 22 women that are complaining about him until sometime next year because he doesn't even get deposed until February 22nd. And, I mean, you've got, Bolin daughters that are now kind of running the team, and so that could be a big issue. But what I think is interesting is, the Broncos have now gone six years struggling to find the right replacement for Peyton Manning, and look at all the options that may or may not be available. I mean, you got Aaron Rodgers, who definitely wants to be there. You got Deshaun Watson, who now through Kareem Jackson said he wants to be there. Teddy Bridgewater came over in a trade and took a pay cut on his base salary down to $4.7 million, even though Carolina paid him a whole bunch of money, I think what, $9 million or so. But it's like I think it's fascinating to see that hey, this is now a team that people were lining up for and wanting to play.
It is interesting that they could go from having a terrible quarterback situation to potentially having one of the guys that's considered one of the top quarterbacks in the league. But I can't imagine Deshaun Watson is going to play before the resolution of those civil suits. And you mentioned his deposition is scheduled for February of 2022. If those cases aren't settled, and even after they're settled, I still think he might be punished after that. But I cannot imagine him playing between now and the resolution of those.
Well, I can see him playing. It's not just that, because what you're looking at from the commissioner's office is that if they do suspend him, they'll just put him on the exempt list. Yeah, the exempt list, and that's six games. You go back to Ben Roethlisberger, but in 2011, because he had a woman in Georgia that accused him of sexual harassment or sexual assault and all that stuff. The case never went into the court system. I mean, it was one that she makes the accused, and there's no arrest or anything of that nature. But they gave him a six-game suspension, and they pulled it down to four. But under the CBA, I don't think there's any way you can suspend him more than six games.
John, I don't think the Packers have much to worry about with Aaron Rodgers right now because Jordan Love is balling. People are keeping track of his completions at practice, I guess, and they feel like he at least looked better than he did at Tuesday's practice. I'm curious as to how much you feel the rest of the roster, the veterans, are thinking about what's taking place right now in Green Bay.
Well, you know that Devontae Adams and pretty much the receivers are thinking about Aaron Rodgers because, five of the top receivers on the team didn't show up until the minicamp, and so they just weren't there. And so, you can see that they're supporting him. David Bakhtiari is supporting Aaron Rodgers. And Jordan Love was terrible on Monday. I mean, he had a horrible practice. And even you can talk about the day that he had yesterday because he had one good drive, but I think he was like 13 for 25. I mean, that's barely, it's just just a little bit over 50% completions. So it's like as much as they may want to praise him, and they're going to praise him as much as they possibly can just to try to get the most out of him, it's like it's there. But it's like whatever it's going to be, he's not Aaron Rodgers. And if he's going to be the starting quarterback, they're not going to win more than six games.
John, we read some of the quotes from Montez Sweat and then from Sam Darnold, both talking about in Montez Sweat saying that he couldn't imagine himself getting treated for COVID unless he gets COVID. I expect we're going to have more of these conversations in the next few weeks. is, do you know of any of the protocols? Are the NFL teams going to have protocols similar to baseball? Like if you get to a certain threshold of players, different rules will apply in terms of distancing and travel and those sort of things?
I'm sure that they're going to have some distancing things. I know that the Players Association is still negotiating the option that you can have the vaccine or not. We already know where it stands with the coaches. If you don't have the vaccine, you're now tier two and you can't be on the field. And I know there's at least five teams that have coaches right now that are questioning whether they're going to get the vaccine or not, and those coaches will not be on the field. So that's to be resolved. But as of now, I mean, the players still have the option of doing that. I just don't – I mean, it's like, how much more information do you need? I mean, it's like we already know the information that's out there. It's like you either want it or you don't want it. Simple as that.
Professor, I saw a story that involves Panthers owner Dave Tepper, and it had to do with a new stadium potentially in Charlotte. That stadium was built 1996. It's been around for a while, and I guess by today's standards, that means that it is – an ancient coliseum of sorts. He said that he won't buy a new stadium there, and I suppose that would open the possibility of moving for Carolina. But the question that I have for you is, what do you think the next NFL team will be to move? Is it Jacksonville? Is it somebody else?
No, I don't see any team moving. I mean, because at this stage, I mean, down in Jacksonville, they're talking about building a new stadium in downtown Jacksonville. I mean, Dave Tepper is one of the richer owners in the league, and he can fund. He wants half of the stadium that he's willing to buy and do that. So, but if not, he can stay there. And so I don't see any because I don't see anybody moving to Europe. Where in the States are you going to move? Are you going to move San Antonio or something like that? I don't buy it. I think that there's not going to be any expansion. They like the 16 team format in each conference, and I don't see anything changing.
How good do you think the Panthers are going to be this year?
8-8, maybe something like that.
Yeah,
I mean, they'll be okay. They'll be better because I think their offense was okay last year. They made some moves on defense. We'll see how good of coach Matt Rhule is. Certainly, I think Sam Darnold's going to help them out because I think, with the coaches around him and Joe Brady and all that stuff, he'll get better. So, but I look at him more as an 8-8 team.
Professor, we always appreciate it. We're going to look forward to talking to you tomorrow when we wrap up our week with you.
Okay, sounds good.
That is John Clayton. You can hear him in the afternoons, 4 o'clock, with Wyman and Bob. You also got a chance to follow him on 710sports.com. We got someone else who's in the circle of trust. The inner circle of trust. Find out who's inducted next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
We have created a Mariners circle of trust. The guys that every single day we look at and we think, you know what? They're going to deliver. Originally, it included Mitch Haniger. It also included Kendall Graveman. We might need to add somebody else into the circle of trust, Danny.
Is Graveman, does he walk back into the circle? I think he pitched in Tacoma two nights ago. They had an off day yesterday. He's probably could be on his way back to the big league club, even in the time. Maybe he has one more rehab outing, but we could see him. Does he immediately walk back in?
Because of the way that he has pitched, yes.
Okay.
He does walk back in. But that's the
All right.
main reason
so
that
he's
he walks
in.
Back in.
He's still in. Who else is in?
It's time that we welcome J.P. Crawford into the circle of trust, guys.
With the knowledge you've been given, you are now on the inside of what I like to call the Burns family circle of trust.
Welcome in, J.P. Crawford. I mean, the guy's on fire right now.
He's hitting extremely well. He's been their most consistent hitter for about a month now. Mm-hmm. Does he have the highest average on the team?
He does, and it's by quite a significant margin now. 277. That is over 23 points more than Mitch Haniger.
He doesn't have the pop that Haniger does. He's not their best overall hitter, but he's moved back to the top of the lineup. Like that was, they moved him to and started this season with him hitting ninth with the idea that he hasn't shown us enough with the bat. We'll have a secondary leadoff hitter. And they were kind of worried about how JP would take that. And well, he took it by hitting his way back to the top of the order.
Yep.
Plays great defense. Great. Great with a big G.
He leads the league in defensive runs saved. And since he said this on May 16th,
people always make a big deal about who you're facing, you know, like, oh, you're facing Bieber or Kershaw, one of these pitchers. But at the same time, you guys can't go up there with the mindset of being, like, intimidated or anything like that. You have to be competitive and just say, hey, bring it on, right?
Absolutely. Bring it on. I'm going to rake your face. That's what I think up there at the box.
Ever since he has said, I'm going to rake your face, J.P. Crawford is hitting 312. And he is I think he has a OPS of 494, right? Nick, check that. No, he has a slugging percentage of 494 right now. I mean, it's a really impressive what he has been able to do over the last couple of weeks. And when you look at that now at the top of the lineup, I mean, this is clearly the move that they had to make, also corresponding to sending Jared Kelnick down. I think he's the perfect guy to lead off this lineup.
He's playing great there. It looks awesome. You got the question of what do you do with him for the future. This was a guy that you didn't take a flyer on, but it was, hey, he was a top prospect for the Phillies, and he kind of got his shot, and it didn't click for him in the big leagues with Philadelphia. They were looking to move on, and you're like, hey, that is a former top-tier prospect. Yeah, we'll give him a shot. We'll see how it works out. And he spent some time in the minor leagues, came back. He's firmly established. He's gold glove winning shortstop. How strongly do you feel about him as part of your future? He's 26 years old. You have 2 years. He won't be an unrestricted free agent until after the 2023 season. You have two more years of arbitration eligibility.
Does everyone on your team have to hit for power?
No.
He has been getting, I would say, a decent amount of doubles thus far on the year. So at the very
it's
least,
been better recently too.
Right.
He has shown more than a singles hitter.
So there's a little extra pop there. He's a great fielder, and he is a bargain comparatively option for you just because of what you just laid out. I mean, you have him essentially under team control for the next 3 years. It's going to be hard, though, to entirely pass on some of the shortstops that are going to be available this offseason, though, right?
We got three dudes, right?
Carlos Correa, Corey Seager, and who's the third one off the top of my
head? Trevor Story?
Yes.
With the Rockies?
Yes.
All are better hitters than Crawford. None are as good a fielder. But the main value in baseball, I mean, getting power, and that's been one of the changes, is that it used to be shortstop was a light hitting position. And that's really changed over the past 20 to 25 years. Really, A-Rod was started the biggest factor in changing that, but we've seen more and more production come from shortstops. He's going to be an average to good hitting shortstop in baseball and a great fielder. How strongly do you feel about him as part of your future? Because there's the extreme would be to say, I'll raise my hand and say, I'm not interested in any of those free agents. I don't want them. Take that money that you would have to spend to sign one of those guys, spend it somewhere else, because J.P. Crawford said. I'm not sure that I want to go the full in a full commitment to Crawford and say, I want to extend him. Those are two different questions. I'm not looking for an upgrade at shortstop, but I'm not sure how long I want to tie myself to J.P.
Jeff Passan was on the Brock and Salk podcast, and he wondered that very same thing. He's interested to see if the Mariners would invest in Crawford given the free agent shortstop class.
J.P. Crawford is a guy who has seemingly all the talent in the world, and at times you look at him and you're like, this is the shortstop of the future. But when you have a free agent class that includes Javier Baez and Carlos Correa and Trevor Story and Corey Seager, all of a sudden you can start dreaming a little bit.
When you have something like this and you have him under team control, assuming that this production keeps up, as badly as I would love to see them bring in someone like Carlos Correa, I think you have to move forward with the idea that Crawford's your guy right now. Because I think
you commit to him long term?
Do you have to commit to him long term right now? I feel like that's more of a question with someone like Mitch Haniger at this point in time, given that he's closer to the end of the arbitration. He has one more year of that, right?
Yeah, but Crawford's younger.
True.
Crawford's significantly younger. Is J.P. Crawford your shortstop of the future? I think we both agree he's the shortstop of the present, and you're ecstatic to have him. Is he your shortstop of the future? You can text in 710-710, the Mac and Jack's text line.
Throw this in, too. I know that managers from time to time, coaches as well, they're going to speak in sometimes trope and hyperbolic language. But when you hear Scott Service say this, I think this is another card that would be in Crawford's favor.
JP has been huge in our clubhouse, and he's the quarterback of our team. He really is. You talk about our defense and the guy in the middle of the field that is always in tune where everybody's supposed to be lined up. Shed Long was in here today, and I said, hey, man, whatever JP tells you, just listen to him. He knows what's going on. So we've got a ton of confidence in JP, and he's earned it. He's playing great. He's swinging the bat just awesome, and hopefully it continues for a long time.
That sounds like extra value on top, right? Intangibles?
Yeah, yes. You got a young team. I'm not really worried about the leadership part of it or thinking like, hey, he's the nucleus that holds everything together. I like the Tony set. I like the way this team plays. I don't think you see the personality of your team yet. I don't think you know what it's going to be. I think that's going to depend on how things look when you see a couple of the young players break out and become all-stars.
That makes sense. In the meantime, though, don't you want to have essentially babysitters is probably the incorrect word, but chaperones, supervisors. I think that Crawford in the near future, and I would say probably 2 years down the road, 3 years down the road, I think with the way he's playing, he's somebody that you would want to have around because of those things that he brings to the table. And just because also, I think that's how you kind of foster the ability for those young players that we hope will be all-stars someday to thrive, to have some sense of familiarity up here.
So for your answer, he is your shortstop of the future.
Yeah. And I'm surprised I'm saying that. But honestly, I look at where his contract is and the way that he's hitting and all of those other things that he brings. Why not? You know, it just seems like it makes a lot of fiscal sense in on top of that baseball sense.
I'm not ready to do that. He's a good shortstop for now, and he's good enough that I don't want to spend any money at that position. Not only J.P. Crawford, but you've got Noelvé Marte, who is several years off and one of your top prospects in the minor leagues, but he's still, I think right now he's in low A. He's in Modesto.
Right.
I don't want to commit longer than that. He's my shortstop for right now, and I don't want to buy anybody that I'll put in top of him in that place.
He is Danny O'Neill. I'm Paul Gallant. It's Danny and Gallant, 710 ESPN Seattle. Jake Heaps proposed a massive, literally massive, addition for the Seattle Seahawks that could put them over the top. We'll react to his take next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
All right, Paul, you want your update as how the sticky baseball turns?
Hit me, baby.
When last we heard from Gerrit Cole, he was, what, hemming and hawing, and I don't know how to answer that question. Well, yesterday he faced Josh Donaldson, and Josh Donaldson, who's now with the Twins and is fairly universally disliked across the league.
Why?
Not many. He's annoying.
Okay.
I mean, that's the best. Like, he kind of won't shut up. He's got a pretty high opinion of himself. I don't even know if his mom likes him. I'm not sure. I don't even know if that's the case.
He's got some Aaron Rodgers things going on.
No. I'm not speaking literally. I'm just saying that. Hey, I've never heard anyone stand up and say, you know who I really like? I really like Josh Donaldson. Donaldson's now with the Twins, and he had made a remark after his last saying that Gerrit Cole. You look at his spin rate. After they started talking about cracking down on the stickiness, his spin rate suddenly isn't as tight. And so Michael Kay, who is the bombastic, kind of insufferable Yankees announcer, he had some thoughts. He wasn't advising Gerrit Cole. He was very careful to say, I'm not advocating for Cole to do this. He's telling you, if he were a major league pitcher and he had someone talk about, make an accusation like that, what he would do. Here's Michael Kay yesterday.
And I'll tell you what Michael Kay, the player, would do, and it's, I'm not advocating, please don't think I'm advocating for it, but I think Chris Garland said at the end of the show yesterday with us, Josh Donaldson getting one right in the ribs for opening his mouth. Well, why are you jumping me? Even Cole said that was low-hanging fruit because he's the guy with the big contract. He's getting one right in the ribs in the first inning. Right in the ribs. You want to talk? Try talking with a broken rib.
Jeez. These New Yorkers are savages.
It's just this Teamsters-type mentality. Oh, yeah?
Really?
We're going to enforce a code of silence. Or maybe it's more mafia than Teamsters.
Don't you love, too, how he's Michael Kay basically removes himself from guilt? You know, I'm not saying it, but you know, Chris Carlin over here, he's saying it. Chris Carlin's saying you should throw at him in the ribs.
I would just in general say that there is the people most likely to talk tough about what they would do to someone are the people least likely to handle a punch in the face well.
Oh.
The people most likely to say, hey, you know what? I'm going to throw one right in your ribs are the least likely to be able to take a punch.
Okay. Interesting.
That's just my general life experience. Just my general life experience is that usually the people who are more willing to say those things are the less resilient when it comes to being struck.
What if Mark Wahlberg had been there, though?
Is Mark Wahlberg a tough guy?
Mark Wahlberg has a famous quote about something he would have done had he been in a specific place at a certain time. Sorry, I'll just move on from that one.
It's Danny and Gallant. Jay Keeps has some ideas about how to make a big addition. And as captain of Team All In when it comes to the Seahawks and this year and next year, the short marriage between Russell Wilson and the team, kind of saying like, hey, we've got to approach this like it's the potential end of it and go for broke, which I'm very much a part of. I was very interested to hear his suggestion about who might be a candidate for that type of push. Here it is. It's a defensive player.
Hakeem Hicks, defensive tackle for the Chicago Bears. He's on the last year of his deal, so he would need a new contract. But the good thing about it is that he's on the tail end of his career. You wouldn't be giving him a massive extension down the line. I think you might even be able to get him for potentially a late-round pick at 32 years old. The only caveat to this is that he does have a $10.4 million cap charge. But if you're looking at really, truly upgrading your team, I know cornerback has been the focus. It's the weakest part of your team.
Should be the focus.
I don't think so.
You don't think corners should be
the
focus?
No, I think the focus for this team needs to be up front.
I agree with Jake about the defensive line. I think you can make do. The Seahawks have been able to make do at corner. I agree with him about that. I don't think Hicks is the guy, though. I'm not interested in Hicks.
Devil's advocate argument. Jake is right. I think there's been a lot of assumptions that the defensive line for the Seahawks is fine.
Yeah, I agree with you. You had a Kerry Hyder who's coming off of a career year and the feeling that, okay, it's definitely upgraded. I don't know that it's definitely upgraded.
Right.
I don't know that. And are we assuming that it's going to look as good as it did for the final six games when, by the way, they weren't playing good quarterbacks? Yeah. Yeah, there's some projection there. I do think that defensive line is... I'm just not interested in Hicks.
I mean, what frustrates me most about the way that the season ended, Cam Akers, who I find to be a very boring running back, ran all over you in that last game. So this is why I could see the idea of adding a 6'4", 350-pound behemoth to the interior of your defensive line. I can see that idea. But trading for a guy who's 32, the cap charge.
The cap, $10 million.
The cap charge is my big issue, too. Now,
and weren't they going to cut him?
If they cut him, then that's where you pounce. Is that possible? I don't know.
Here's the thing. If they cut him, though, and that's because he was one of the players mentioned as being offered to the Seahawks in the trade for Russell Wilson. And then they didn't make the trade, and then they cut the defensive back, Kyle Fuller.
Yep.
And then he signed almost right away. He signed with Denver,
right,
is where he ended up going to. And there were good people thought they were going to cut Hicks, and they didn't. If Chicago's going to let you go, they don't have anybody to pay, and they're not paying a quarterback. If they decide, like, hey, this guy isn't worth it, how would you, as the Seahawks, who are paying a quarterback, see that as a good value?
The Bears are in a bad spot, though, right? I mean, aren't they still technically paying Nick Foles and on top of whatever they're paying Andy Dalton? And
But man, you don't become if you're a good team, you don't get better by paying salaries to guys that aren't good enough to merit that salary on a bad team.
I don't know, man. I think the Bears are a joke. Like, I think that they have been horribly run by Ryan Pace, and that he survived this purge of the firings that we saw last offseason boggles my mind. So if he is on the open market, I don't mind that. Honestly, I think they should take a swing at Geno Atkins, and I know that his name's been mentioned.
I like Atkins.
He was a hell of a player in Cincinnati in the middle of the past decade.
And he's going to be cheaper. He's going to be significantly cheaper. He might even be veteran minimum. If you're going to pay $10 million, that dude better rush a passer. And Akeem Hicks did 3 years ago. Like, that's the last time we've seen that from him. And by the way, in his 9 years, he's only had 3 years where he had as many as 5 sacks. And that's, he's 3 years removed from that. So I'm out on that. If you're going to get a run stuffer, you can pay $2 million and get a run stuffer. You can get a guy, you could find a guy to stuff the run for significantly less than what you'd have to pay Akeem Hicks.
But you do, if you're going to get someone to stuff the run, I don't think that you want necessarily a replacement level player. And I think that's the argument Jake is essentially making here. And I don't disagree with that argument. I mean,
man, but Seattle's been so good at finding that guy and not paying for him. Whether it was Tony McDaniel, Tauber Rubin, like they've been a sweet spot of like, but they have been able to find replacement level guys who've been pretty good.
But where was that guy last year? I guess is what I'm asking. Where was that guy last year? You moved on from Jaron Reed. It wasn't him. There are a couple of games that I think you need to focus on. The Giants game where Wayne Gallman ran all over
you,
and the game that Cam Akers had at the end of the season. And I think that, while I think it's easy to look at some of the moments that Bobby Wagner had, and they weren't good, and be mad about them, and by the way, I was, but you also have to think about who was in front of him, and was the person in front of him on that defensive line occupying the necessary space to make it a little bit more difficult for those guys to get to the second level? That's all I'm asking. And they didn't have that guy last year.
I'm out on him. I don't want to hire old guys to pass their prime for big money.
What if he were released, and you're not going to sign him, I would imagine, for a $10 million cap charge if he were to be cut in the coming weeks?
I don't want to pay more than $5 million for Akeem Hicks.
Okay.
It's Danny and Gallant. We're going to bring in Brock Heward. That's coming up next, Blue 42.